The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same-game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN. COLIN. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This is our 16th episode, and we got my little brother, my little Spartan dog brother, Miles Bridges, on the show today. We will talk about his breakout season, him thinking he can dunk on me, which is beyond me. We're also going to talk about Michigan high school basketball, and as well as the AAU circuit. And a lot more. I've known Miles for a very long time. I think I've known Miles since he was maybe in the eighth grade. And, you know, just watching him grow his entire journey, becoming somebody in the basketball world as a kid from Flint, it's just not that easy. And I know that because I'm from Saginaw, Michigan, and they're one and the same. And to watch him work and become who he's become and being able to provide for his family the way he provides makes me extremely proud, because I know what it's like to start with that dream and not have a clue of how it's going to work out. And to see him living his dream and flourishing, it means the world to me. But before we get into the Miles Bridges conversation, let's take you around the association as we love to do. Number one, LeBron's historical night against my Warriors was brutal to watch. Number one, but in the same token, was extremely incredible. I mean, you're talking a guy at 37 still being able to produce at that level. And yes, you know, he had 56, which was incredible. You know, it's not as if this is just surprising and LeBron had 56 and we're like, oh my God, like that came out of nowhere. It didn't come out of nowhere. It's insane that LeBron is still able to produce at the level that he's producing in his 19th season in the NBA. It's funny because we were just in Cabo a couple weeks ago for All-Star break. I walked into LeBron's crib and he's like, he's using this stem, like electrical current type machine on his quad. And I said to him right then, I said, dude, you just don't stop. And he's like, man, gotta do it. Gotta get the quad fire. You know, I had the knee issue. So I need to get this quad. And I'm just like, you just never stop. Like, it's always something with you in regards to your body and the game. And like, it's mind blowing to me. Obviously, I was there, I was rehabbing. So, you know, I'm in the weight room every day, and, you know, he comes down every day to get his work in. Now, I will say I was up before him. Early bird, get the worm. No, but obviously my workouts are way longer because I'm rehabbing to come back from injury, which, by the way, I am projecting or targeting my return next Monday. Next Monday, the 14th versus the Wizards. That is the date that I am targeting. I'm excited as hell. I mean, it's been 2.5 months, almost 2 months for sure. Almost 2.5 by the time I play. I've never missed that much time during season. Now, I have once had an ankle injury that kept me out for a very long time in high school, but it was the off season. So this is something different for me. So I'm extremely excited to get back out there with my guys to try to help right the ship. You know, it's been a little haywire these last few weeks, and, you know, but we'll figure it out. I think this rough patch has been great for our team. You know, people always look at our team and they still think like this is the Warriors that was winning championships. And the reality is it's not. You know, Klay Thompson's won championships. Andre Iguodala's won championships. Steph Curry's won championships. Kevon Looney and myself. That's 5 of 17. And so this isn't the same Warriors that won championships before, which is why I'm happy we're going through this patch, because now you really have to figure out what it takes to win in this league. Now you really have to dig deep. We're in a rut, so you're going to have to claw your way out. You're going to have to gut a nasty one out, probably. That's just normally how it goes. And so as much as it sucks to go through this, no one ever wants to go through it, I'd much rather this be happening now than get punched in the mouth the first round of the playoffs and scrambling, trying to figure out how to respond, because so many guys in our locker room have not witnessed or have not played under that type of pressure, have not played in that type of environment, have not run up against a tough period, a tough stretch, and had to get through it. You know, this season for us, it's pretty much been rolling through. And so, like I said, you never feel good about it. You never feel good about losing. You know, we always say, like, you much rather get learn your lessons from winning. That's just always the better way to learn lessons. And saying that, it normally doesn't go that way. And that's kind of where we are now. So, you know, the team will keep fighting it, and we'll get better, and we'll figure it out. I have no doubt in my mind that we'll figure it out. But I am very happy to be returning and able to help right the ship. So that's going to be good for me. I have a doctor's appointment today, got my final clearance. So I'm ready to roll now, just, you know, getting a little more playing under my belt, a little more 5-on-5, 4-on-4, just kind of trying to get my legs back under me and get my stamina back, my endurance back. So it's going well, and I am looking forward to that date next week. The irony in Klay returning the day that my calf locks up and I'm dealing with the disc injury. It's crazy to me. I mean, I've literally looked forward to that day for 2 years. And, you know, obviously thought it was nearing, you know, November of 2020. And then obviously the Achilles injury happens. And so, or September of 2020, I'm sorry, where we were getting ready to kick off camp. And then the Achilles injury happened. And like, I couldn't wrap my mind around like all the anticipation. I mean, if you were around the facility at that time, like, everything was about Klay Day. You know, Klay Day this, Klay Day that. Klay Day is approaching. I mean, I even think back to, like, I'm out there doing my pregame warm-up sometime in December. And I, maybe December 27th-ish. And I can recall Clay, he was shooting at the same time as me. Our shooting times overlap. And he's walking off the court. And if I'm not mistaken, he's holding up 1-3 walking off the court. And he had his countdown going. And it was 13 days until he returned. And at that point, they hadn't released yet that he was targeting the January 9th date. And so we were getting ready to head out on a road trip. I think it was Dallas. No, I'm sorry. It was Denver and Utah. The Denver game ended up being canceled, which was the game that just happened this week in Denver that no one played in, or for us. Not no one. Steph, Wiggins, myself, Clay, Otto Porter, Gary Payton II. Like, we were missing a lot of guys just this game. And Clay's walking off holding up 13. Or like 1-3, and I'm looking at him like he's so excited. And as I'm watching him walk off holding that up, I'm thinking to myself, like, these people have no idea these numbers he's holding up. But actually, if they knew, it's a countdown to his return. Like, he's been counting down days, and he's been making sure every day you walk in the facility, you know where his countdown is. And so when he's walking off and holding that up, I'm just sitting there laughing because I'm watching these people go crazy. Like, our fans are going nuts. He just finished shooting. And I'm like, but they really don't have a clue of why he's holding up those numbers. And that was exciting for me. And so the build up, and, you know, then we scrimmaged the day before. And like I told you before, I was humming, like buzzing, playing well. And the reality is, what I have not said is, leading up to that, maybe like with a few games before, I ended up sitting out the New Orleans game. And that Dallas game, when we played in Dallas, I think it was January 4th or 5th, somewhere around that time. I couldn't move that game. Like, I'm just out there and I couldn't move. I'm like, man, I'm just hurting. And so the next day in New Orleans, I didn't play, and which I was projected to play, and then I didn't. And so come to find out, I had already been a few games before that. I was in the tunnel rolling out like my glute, because my glute was tightening up, like just randomly would tighten up. And so before I go back in the game, I'm like rolling on a little lacrosse ball because it can get to deeper muscles than a foam roller can. And so I'm rolling on a lacrosse ball, and then it loosen up a little bit, and I go back in the game. And those end up being symptoms of the injury that I had. But like, I think back to all of that buildup and like feeling bad those couple of days, and then practicing the day before Clay returned and feeling great. And like, oh man, it's time. Like, and then that evening, I'm sitting at home and my calf lock up. And then the whole snowball effect starts to happen. But I said all of that to say, I have been waiting for this moment. I have the opportunity to get back out there and play with my brothers again. And, you know, there were times where I was doubting whether, like, I mean, not doubting, but like, you know, we none of us like to hear the surgery word come up, but that was a possibility. And so, and Dr. Tay has been incredible. Dr. Walk is in LA, who I consulted with as well. Like, neither one of them thought I needed surgery, so it was great to put that to rest. But there was a point where, I mean, even 3 weeks ago, like, I still wasn't sure that I was out of the woods. You know, I'm feeling better. Symptoms are gone, but you can just never be so sure. And so now that it's almost here, man, to have the opportunity, like, I'm excited to take the floor with all my guys, all my brothers, but to have the opportunity to go out there and take the floor again with Steph and Clay, guys who I always say, and Andre as well. I'm not sure when Andre will be back, but guys who we always say, like, we started to build this thing from the bottom. Like, when the Warriors were the laughingstock of the NBA, we started to build this thing from the bottom. And now to be taking the floor with those guys again, man, I can't tell you all how excited I am. And, you know, I always say this is my time of year right now. Like, I historically have performed better in the playoffs. And so I'll have 14 games to get my rhythm back and to get in the swing of things and try to get my endurance back and my stamina, which at this point, you just go for what you know. And regardless of what it is, I'm going to make it work. Like, that's the competitor. That's the fight in me. And so, man, it's time. And I cannot fucking wait to take the floor with my brothers again. I cannot wait. And speaking of returning from injury, we also know Kevin Durant just returned from injury. And boy, did they run up into a monster the other day. My goodness, Jason Tatum. 54 points. The one move where he threw it out between Kyrie and somebody, I think maybe Bruce Brown, it's like, and then split up. I can't even walk you through the move how I want to walk you through it because it was so unorthodox and so incredible. So if you have not seen that clip of Jason Tatum splitting those two guys, whatever the hell he did. It was one of the most insane moves. And, you know, to see Jason Tatum going up against the Brooklyn Nets, up against Kevin Durant, and go for 54, insane. I already know and understand how good Jason Tatum is. And saying that and spending a ton of time with him in the Olympics, you quickly realize how young he is. And he's been playing at a very high level since he came into the league. And so when you have guys like that, you tend to forget how young they are. And then you spend a ton of time around Jason Tatum and, like, some of the questions he asks, and you realize, like, yo, like, he's still a baby. And you know, we've built a relationship, which I am extremely thankful for. I don't take any relationship for granted. I am a relationships person. I build relationships. I cherish relationships. They're very important for me. So I am very thankful for the relationship that we've built. But to see him put the team on his back after the way the Celtics were struggling to start the season, you heard all the talks about needing to break Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown up. And I commend Jason because he came out right away and said, no, me and Jaylen, we're not a problem. Like, we can play well together and we're going to figure it out. And they are figuring it out. And it's been beautiful to see, extremely happy to see such a young man take onus of a situation. And in doing that, has produced like no other. And his team is now, I think, 11 games above 500, maybe in the fourth or fifth seed in the East, and continuing to climb. So it's a beautiful thing to see. That was an incredible game. It was also great to see Kevin back on the floor. I mean, this Kevin is, I think everyone already know how incredible I think Kevin is. But, you know, he used to be like a walking 25 dude, a walking 30 piece now. I mean, he come out of injury. I think his first game he had 31, second game 37. I mean, just for a guy to miss, what, 7 weeks of time and then come back out and doing that like it's nothing. It's the most insane thing. The Nets are having some problems of their own. They're on some losing. They've been in the midst of a losing streak or a couple different ones. And so they need to right their ship as well. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how they handle it, just as how we're going to handle it, because we're kind of in the same space. Maybe not as far as, like, public issues or whatnot. But as far as records, I mean, our record is better. But as far as, like, currently what you're doing right now, we're kind of in the same space. So I'm as a basketball fan, I'm looking forward to seeing how they come out of it, as well as I'm looking forward to seeing how we come out of it.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, I am extremely honored and excited to have this next guest, a guy who is a little brother, not who I call, is a little brother of mine, who, man, I've known since, probably since eighth or ninth grade year. And obviously, I'm from Saginaw, Michigan. He's from Flint, Michigan. You know, we kind of one in the same, that Flint-Saginaw connection. But we also, them roots run a little deeper. Michigan State Spartan, played two seasons at Michigan State, was a freshman of the year at Michigan State, was All-American his second year at Michigan State. And more importantly, was then moved on to be the 12th pick in the NBA draft, was originally drafted by the Clippers, but was traded on draft night to the Charlotte Hornets, where he is now making a huge impact, having an all-star worthy season. I think should have been an all-star, but you know, only going to continue to get better, so that'll happen. But want to welcome none other than the absolutely incredible Miles Bridges. What's up, my brother?
That was good, Day-Day.
Not much, man. I thank you for coming on. This, as you know, this is exciting for me. Just I enjoy doing this, not only to share this with the fans, but I also get something out of these conversations, and especially right. When I have opportunities to chop it up with guys who I have personal relationships with. And obviously, you know how that runs deep for us. But getting started, you know, you're having a great season, but we all know that you are an unrestricted free agent. A restricted free agent coming up this year. How are you feeling about that process? Are you excited about it? Are you nervous about it?
I mean, I'm excited. You know, it's definitely always exciting for somebody to go through that, especially the position that I'm put in. But for me right now, I'm really just worried about the season. You know, we fell out of the top eight. So I'm trying to get us to the playoffs, and that's the main goal right now.
And speaking of falling out of the top eight, last year you guys were in the play-in game as well, and you ultimately lost to Indiana. We were in the play-in game as well and lost. How did you feel about the whole play-in scenario? Did you think it was great for the league? Did you not like it? How do you feel about it?
I mean, for us, I mean, it's good because we have a chance to get in if we're not in. But I feel like if I was in the top six, I don't know, or top seven, top eight, I don't really like it.
But it's funny, but go ahead, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, for our position is good, but for the ones that made it to the 7 and 8, I don't like that.
It's funny because we were actually a victim of that last year, where I think we were the 8. No, we were the 7 seed. And we were the 7 seed. We lost that first game to Memphis.
Yeah.
And then we lost the second one to the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I got the seeding off a little bit because then we played at the Lakers. So maybe we were the 8. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were 7. We lost to Memphis, and then we lost to the Lakers in L.A. And right. I think for me, I can't lie, I actually enjoyed the playing in the game in part due to, you know, I had missed the playoffs for a year. And so then having the opportunity to kind of feel that intensity a little bit, I enjoyed the actual game. But in saying that, where we were sitting in the AFC, it was kind of a bit frustrating because we lost to Memphis, who we had just beat 3 days before that.
Man. Yeah, no, I understand that. That's why I said, if I was in the 7th or 8th, I'd be mad for sure.
Absolutely. But last year, LaMelo Ball joined you guys' team, and I think we all know how incredible of a player that he is. But what's been most exciting for you about playing with LaMelo?
Just the excitement that he brings to the game. You never know what he's going to do. You know, you might – think you're going up for a regular lob, you go between the legs and throw it up. Or just him getting hot at any moment. He's very, very streaky. If he sees one go in, he's excited. He's excited the whole game. So, like, I love playing with him. He's a great passer, great facilitator, great teammate. I love being around him as a person. So I'm happy that we got Melo.
Absolutely. I think from what I see, his energy seems to be contagious. Like, you guys go out there.
Sure.
It reminds me a lot of Steph in a different way. Like, Melo's more flashy in life overall, not just on the basketball court, but he's more flashy. He's, you know, he's just kind of more culturally into different things that Steph weren't. But when I say remind me of Steph, I mean the looseness. Like, Steph is super loose, super chill, super casual, and he played a game of basketball that way. And in turn, our entire organization ended up following that. Like, you come around and it's loose. It's, you know, you walk into a practice, guys throwing basketball all over the place. And I think I see some of that from you guys. Do you feel that way, or am I off a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, right on the money. You know, as soon as he got here, the culture changed. He's always had a lot of fans since he was, like, what, 13, 14. So he's always had that swag to him and all that, and he brought that to us. You know, that's how we've been playing. Our practice has been different. Our energy within the crowd during the games is different. You can tell whenever he steps on the court that they just love him. And he feeds off that. So I feel like that helps us out, too. And he does a great job of keeping everybody energized. Like you said, his energy is contagious. He's been a great addition for that.
You guys have a lot of a young talent, and yourself, Kelly, who I had the opportunity to be a teammate with last year that I really enjoyed, Terry Rozier. But then you also have a couple veteran guys, and Gordon and Mason. I'm sorry. How is that mix? I know coming into this season, like, we're kind of in that same position where we have a mixture of some experienced guys and then also a bunch of young guys as well. And I wasn't sure, and you could check my interviews from the beginning of the season, I wasn't sure how that will work because, and I said it in my interview, I said historically, we've never seen that work, or where you try to mix a group of young guys with some old guys who timelines are different. And it's been working for us, and it's worked for y'all to some degree too. How do you feel about that mix and how it makes the magic of y'all team happen?
I mean, it's great for me. You know, like my first season, I was in there with just straight vets. You know, like we had Kemba Walker, Nick Batum, Jeremy Lamb, Marvin Williams, all those guys. And we were good, but, you know, it's hard just being a young guy coming in. You know, they got wives, they got all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't really get to hang out with them like that. In my second year, it was more so all young guys. And then we're inexperienced. We're getting blown out by 20 every game with no vet to tell us what's going on. So for us to have a mixture now, I feel like it's great for us. You know, we have Gordon whenever things get out of hand, he calms us down. And then when it's time to go up and down the floor, you can rely on your young guys. So I feel like it's good for a mixture in the locker room and outside the locker room too, when you're hanging out.
When I watch y'all team, to me, it feels like you are the vocal leader, and it feels like you've made a concerted effort to step your leadership up. And I think I see guys following that. Where do you feel you are in your leadership skills and just in your leadership journey, and how much further do you need to go?
I'll say because I'm the longest tenured Hornet right now. So I feel like last season I tried to take initiative and become like a vocal leader, help the younger guys out. I'm saying younger guys, like I'm not in my fourth season, but like just helping the younger guys out, the rookies, and keeping everybody's head straight. You know, I feel like everybody on the team likes me and they listen to me. So, you know, I kind of got it from you, what you did with the Warriors, you know, just keeping everybody straight, being that guy that leads and not afraid to get on anybody at any time. So I feel like I try to be like you with that type of stuff. And I'm getting better at it too. I can also do a better job. You know, Trez came in, he's done a great job of that. But, you know, I feel like I'm the leader of this team.
That's great to hear. How is it having the owner of the team that you play for being Michael Jordan? Like, are you guys able to lean on Mike for advice, for just for different questions that you may have, or is he not that connected with the team?
Oh no, he's connected. You know, I got MJ's number. I text him whenever, you know, we hit a rough patch and see what he would do in the situation. Or I text him about a game and he texts right back. Like as soon as I text him, I give him 5 minutes, he texts right back. It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, before All-Star break, he came in and ripped our ass. We got beat at home by Orlando. So he's very in tune with us. And it's just nice having the GOAT just being there for you at all times, being connected and just being able to rely on him and have resources like that. So, I mean, it's good for me.
And speaking of All-Star break, I have a question that I need to know for myself, especially coming on the heels of you fucking talking about I'm the guy you're going to dunk on, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. But first off, what would spark you to say that? Because now, I mean, not that I wasn't already expecting you to try to dunk on me because you've tried it before, but like now I'm too on my toes for it. Now, like, what would spark you to say that, Miles?
Because every time I try to dunk on you, you foul me. Or something
that shit out of here, Miles.
You never blocked me. You've never blocked me. It's always been a foul. Every time.
So with this clip, we're gonna pull a clip of me blocking your shot, and we're gonna post this. When we promote this episode of the podcast, it's going to be a clip of me blocking your shot. Since you say I've never blocked your shot.
Show the files too.
No. We talking about the block. I see, because one thing, I didn't say I never foul you. I also didn't say I wouldn't foul you to stop you from dunking on me. I said you're not going to dunk on me. So I really don't care about the firehouse.
So I'm going to catch you. I'm going to catch you one day. Watch. It's going to happen.
But and speaking of that, which is not happening, but and speaking of All-Star break, I have a question, especially coming off the heels of probably one of the worst, if not the worst, dunk contest we've ever seen in the NBA. Why is it that you don't participate in the dunk contest?
I mean, I participated my rookie year. And
yeah, but you didn't win it.
I didn't win it at all. So, yeah, I did terrible. I don't know. I mean, it's just for me, I don't know. All-Star break for me is like me getting a break away from basketball, you know. And this year I played the most minutes in the NBA. So I feel like my legs definitely needed a break. You know, I know the fans, they want to see the best dunkers in the league go at it, like myself, John Morant, Zion Williamson when he's healthy, Anthony Edwards. But they got to look at it like it's All-Star break, you know. Mm-hmm. If I would have made the All-Star game, I probably would have did dunk contest. But during that time, though, I'm trying to rest my legs and get ready for the second half of the season because it's a huge run for us, trying to make the playoffs. I think fans don't get that. But at the same time, it's definitely entertainment. It's definitely entertainment. So, you know, I'm going to think about it.
I think you make a great point there that most people don't realize. Even when you are an All-Star, that weekend they've extended the break now, which kudos to our commissioner, Adam Silver, extending the break. Because I remember when I first came in the league, like, you would play your last game Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You then get on an airplane after that Thursday night game, fly to whatever city you're going to, and, like, have media. And if you played your last game on Wednesday, you had to fly Wednesday night and be there Thursday morning for media. And then you're there till Sunday night. And at that point, games used to start back up on Tuesday. And you see, like, now you had games starting back up on Thursday and Friday. You had teams finishing on, like, Wednesday. And so I think that was that's a huge improvement for us. But most fans don't realize in being an All-Star or participating in All-Star weekend, you end up not getting a break. And especially when you're an All-Star and you are the last event, which is the All-Star game, you don't get out of there. Like, I didn't leave Cleveland this weekend, and I didn't play. I didn't leave Cleveland until 3 a.m. with Monday morning. And so it's not much of a break. And I think that's a very great thing that we have now. And we always talk about, like, you younger guys, as the younger the league gets, the more spoiled you guys get. Y'all get this this long break now that we never got.
But our rookie year, I didn't get that break, you know. I did a dunk contest. I probably had, like, what, two days and got right back to it. So, yeah, it was tough. Sure.
I think the NBA can do a better job in making the dunk contest enticing. Like, I'm not sure exactly what the bonus is currently. It's maybe $50,000 or $100,000 or somewhere in between there. I think if the NBA made it more enticing, you get more guys in it. Like, all the guys that you just named. If it's a $250,000 bonus, or I remember when Blake Griffin jumped over to Kia, and then he had that Kia sponsorship for the next 6 years. I think if the league can incorporate something where they maybe use one of their partners that they already have a deal with, like, hey, you're going to have a Kia deal, or you're going to have this deal or that deal, a Mercedes deal, whoever the league are partners with, if they can include in that an endorsement deal for the guy who wins, a much bigger bonus for the guy who wins, would that be more enticing for you as someone who should be in a dunk contest or could be and should and could win it?
Hell yeah. Over jumping over Mercedes for a Mercedes deal, yes. I would definitely do that, or for any type of endorsement. But really, we're just doing it for, what you said, $100,000?
Yeah.
If it's for more stuff like that, though, like endorsements, guys are definitely getting to it. And I think they need to change the format back to, like, just being timed on the dunks. You know, they had so many dunks because it began irritating, man, just watching guys just miss dunks over and over and over again. So it's good. I think the NBA is going to fix it, especially this year. It was kind of a wake-up call for them on the dunk contest, but it'll get fixed.
Michael Levine, you heard it here first. You need to bump your bonus up, my man. You need to get these guys an endorsement deal for winning the dunk contest. We got to do something, Michael, because what I do know is I don't think the answer is to get rid of the dunk contest. Like, you heard so many people saying get rid of the dunk contest. I don't think that's the answer.
No, that's definitely not it. That's definitely not it. Just make it a little more interesting. That's all.
Absolutely. Speaking of awards, there's a lot of guys up for most improved player, yourself being one of them. Jordan Poole is a guy who mentioned a lot, my teammate. Ja Morant, Darius Garland, DeJounte Murray, which are also two. So there's three of the top five clutch clients, by the way. But where do you feel like you rank as far as those guys go? And let me just throw this out here. I don't think Ja Morant is in the most improved player category.
I think he's in the MVP conversation.
And that's it. Like, that's the only conversation he's in. He's not in the most improved player conversation. Like, last year, Ja averaged 21 points a game. Now, yes, he's up to 28 points a game. Yes, that is a huge improvement. But if you know anything about basketball, you're not shocked by that improvement.
Right.
Like, and so I personally don't think he should be in that conversation. But nonetheless, where do you feel like you rank amongst those guys as far as most improved player goes?
I mean, at the beginning of the season, for sure, I thought I was first. My numbers went down a little bit. So plus Darius and DeJounte made the All-Star game. So I'll probably say I'm third right now. We forgot to mention the guy Anthony Simons, too. He's been having a great season. But yeah, for me to be honest, I'm probably like third right now. We still got 20 more games. You know, I'm gonna stay in kill mode, continue to try to win. I feel like the more that I win, the more I have a chance to win MIP. That's really not my goal. My goal is the playoffs. But I think the MIP race is gonna be very tight. You know, there's a lot of guys that improved their game during the summer. So we'll see.
No doubt. And I think, I'll ask you this question. Do you think with 20 games left that there is still something you can do to change that? Or do you think coming down the stretch in the NBA with 20 games left, most races are already decided?
You're right about that. Most races are decided. But like I said, say if we go on like crazy win streak, get to the playoffs, I'm still killing in that situation, yeah, for sure.
No, I agree with you. I think most of the times when you get to the point of the season where we are now, most of those awards kind of be already decided. I actually think this year, all of them are actually still up for grabs. Like, I don't think anyone has solidified themselves as the MVP. I think we know the front runners for MVP.
Right.
And for me, in no particular order, that's Ja, DeMar, and Joel. Mm-hmm. For me. I think Joker also has to be in that conversation as well.
Right.
That's for me personally. But I think amongst those guys, there's still a race. I think if you look at Defensive Player of the Year, obviously if I didn't get hurt, I was running away with that. And you know I was running away with it because no one still has solidified themselves. And I had solidified myself at game 30. And so
sure.
I feel like I was running away with that.
Even though I gamed you in Charlotte.
I mean, every dog has his day. Sun shines on a dog ass every now and then. You can't do nothing about that. You know, so you did. And it's crazy, too, about that. Because I was actually pissed off about that game winner because I got you to go to the exact shot I wanted you to go to. You drive middle. And the angle that I had you on, obviously I know you like to get back to your right hand, but the angle I had you on, if the rim is here, you almost shot it from like here. So I was a little frustrated about that. But I'll tell y'all what, Funny story. Miles, myself, Jaren, Bryn Forbes, Denzel Valentine, Travis Walton, Aaron Henry. Am I missing anyone?
Cassius.
We're all in a group chat from our Spartan Dog, Spartan Grind Week group chat. And the moment Miles gamed me, I went to the group chat like, hey, y'all, Miles just gamed me. Because I already... two things I didn't want to happen. I didn't want one of those guys to come post in the chat like, oh man, Miles gained Draymond. And then I also, and more importantly, I didn't want Miles to come in the chat like, yeah, I just gained Draymond. So no, I went right away, as soon as I got to my locker, like, man, y'all will never believe Miles just gained.
I was gonna let you do it.
Hey, you smart, because then I would have put them blocks in the group chat. I want to ask you some a couple questions. Just going back to high school, played your freshman year at Flint Southwestern, and then after that, you transferred and you went to Huntington Prep. What was your reasoning for leaving Flint and going to Huntington Prep?
Just a lot of distractions, you know. Most of my friends in the streets at the time, and I was still trying to play basketball. So just me getting away from distractions, getting away from the city, and just focus, just having my main focus on basketball. And going to Huntington, West Virginia, it wasn't nothing else, literally nothing else out there but to focus on but basketball. So. I mean, my mom, it's crazy because my mom, she didn't want me to go at all. She didn't want me
really?
To go. She didn't. She didn't want me to go. She wanted me to stay all 4 years. I mean, because I'm her baby, you know?
Yeah, so true.
I'm her youngest child. She didn't want me to go, but I kind of made the decision. And Jeff Greer, he helped me make that decision too, just to get away. And that was probably the best decision I ever made. And see where I'm at now.
You know, that's one thing that I admire about you since coming up. You seem to me, I mean, even when it came to not going in the NBA draft and going back to school, then once it came to going in the NBA draft, then once it was time to pick an agent, you to me, it feels like you're a young man that always has made your own decisions. And that's not always common for... Right. Young men, young African American men, especially not young African American athletes. You know, you have the AAU coach I was just putting on my Instagram earlier about KJ, who you know. The AAU coaches, you have Leeches, you have all of these people who get involved in the decision making process. And that's something that I've always admired about you. And I wanted to share that with you. But just going back to Michigan high school basketball, I think the MHSAA is a fucking joke.
Terrible. I hate it. And that's why you see the top recruits leaving. It's terrible. It's really terrible.
And they still haven't figured that out. And for those of you that don't know, I'll share a little bit of history with you. If you are Miles Bridges, who's a top 15, top 10 player in the country, who gets invited to Nike camp, who gets invited to all of these different things. It used to be the Elite 24. When you came out, it was a Nike game in the Bahamas that you went to. But you have all of these things that, you know, you have the sneaker companies with the grassroots programs, and they have all of these things for the top players. And if you're a player in the state of Michigan, you can't go to most of those things.
Nope.
If you're at a camp and you make the All-Star game, you're not allowed to play in the state of Michigan. In the state of Michigan, you're not allowed to travel, I think, 75 to 90 miles outside of where you play. So, for instance, for me, in Saginaw, the furthest we could travel to play was Toledo, Ohio. Right. And you have all of these tournaments where the world was first introduced to Miles Bridges was him playing in the Dick's Sporting Goods Classic, was him playing in, you know, all of these big-time games on national television. Right. In the state of Michigan, you're not allowed to go to any of those or you forfeit your season. And I think it's so ridiculous. So now you start going down the list and all of the top players leave the state of Michigan. I can't believe that the rule hasn't been changed. And I also think Coach Izzo and the coaches at the other schools down the way need to push more for that. Because the reality is, and I think you can probably attest to this, is don't you think it ultimately costs them recruits when you end up letting a guy leave the state and go somewhere else to high school? Do you think that ultimately end up causing them recruits?
Yeah, I mean, I almost went to Kentucky when I went to West Virginia because it was like, what, 2 hours away? 2 hours away. So they were coming to literally every practice, every game. Michigan State, they're coming, but they couldn't come as much as Kentucky called. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they haven't changed the rule yet. We still don't have a shot clock.
It's ridiculous.
Like I said, the national schedule is what put me on. You know, I was playing against the top players every game. Jason Tatum's, Josh Jackson's at the time, the Harry Giles, those guys. I was playing against those guys. And Michigan, I was playing against, I don't know, who, getting 30, easy. So
absolutely.
They definitely need to change that, especially with the All-Star games, because I didn't even know about the All-Star game if you couldn't play in that.
In part, you left the state so early that by the time you're making them All-Star games, you could play in them.
Yeah. Like you said, they're losing recruits because of that. Michigan State, the other school. And they just got to fix that because they're not giving kids out of Michigan a chance to showcase their talent. And stay in a public school or a private school there and put on for the state of Michigan like it used to be. Like, you had it. You had Saginaw Lit. What was y'all school called?
Saginaw High Trojans, man. I ain't going to no damn Arthur Hill. Saginaw High. All right. And you went to Northwestern. All right, you cool. No big deal.
I'm undefeated against them, so I'm good.
Northwestern was still a school when you was in high school?
Yeah, it was. It was, for sure. That's crazy.
That's funny. But and a couple more questions, and I'll let you go. But when it comes to AAU basketball, do you want an AAU basketball team? Would you rather just support the family? What's your view on AAU basketball and the way it is today?
I mean, right now I feel like AAU is a mess to me, you know. The kids, they really, I don't know, it's different nowadays. It's a different generation. You know, kids play for the highlights. They don't play to win. They don't play the game the right way. It's all ISO ball to me. You can find some good basketball in the EYBL. I'm in the works of starting my own program, putting it in the EYBL, Miles Bridges Elite, soon for the state of Michigan.
Okay.
The first person to hear about this. So
respect.
But when I get that team, I definitely want to teach them how to play the game the right way. Go back to old AAU style when you're playing to win. You know, if you win, you get offers. You get all the highlights. You know, Baller's Life and all that. They're going to be there. Hopefully I can change the game when I get in there. But right now, I feel like AAU is kind of a mess.
About how far out is that? Like, when should we expect Miles Bridges Elite to hit the scene?
If not this AAU season, then next. I'm going to start off with a 15U first.
Okay.
And then go from there.
One thing I will say to you is make sure you have the right people running the program. I tried to get into the AAU business and I was in it for a year, and it's like if you don't have the right people running your program, it's done before it even gets started.
Right.
And so just make sure you have the right people running the program, doing it for the right reason, and not to take advantage of these kids like guys tried to do myself, like guys tried to do you. Because that what it ends up turning into is something that you did from the kindness of your heart and something that you did because you simply wanted to help. it ends up turning into a negative, you know? And so I would say, make sure you have the right people running your program. A funny story about this, actually. Miles is getting ready to come out in the NBA draft. Obviously, Michigan State Spartan. We were playing in Oklahoma City. Miles' last game was in Tulsa against Kansas. I'll never forget it. Against Kansas, Josh Jackson, those guys. And I told Miles after the game, I said, man, great year. You had a great 2 years. I'll see you next year in our league. And he's like, I don't know yet, man. I really like school, but whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll see you in our league next year. Fast forward about within the next week, I get a call or I get a text from Miss Cynthia Bridges. And she said to me, Hey, Draymond, I am so thankful for everything, all the guidance that you've given Miles and being there for him. When it comes to his decision of whether he's going to the NBA or not, you can stay out of it. And I said, huh? I said, well, with all due respect, Miss Bridges, I told Miles I'll see him in the league with me next year. So whoever's contacting you and telling you that I'm telling Miles to go back to school, they're lying to you. She then proceeded to say, well, they told me you telling Miles to go back to school and get a cut, so you can get a cut. I said, well, Miss Bridges, well, there's a couple things wrong with that statement. Number one is I would have to be telling Miles to leave in order to get a cut from anything, but you're actually telling me I told him to stay. Also, Miss Bridges, I'm actually pretty rich. Like, I'm doing pretty well for myself. I don't really need a cut from Miles and like what Miles is going to do. But just so you know, the cut would actually come from getting Miles to sign with an agent. And I don't know, do you recall what I said to you when you asked me about my agent and who I was with? Do you recall what I said to you?
Nah, but I know for sure that you told me to go to the league. You told me that for sure.
I told Miles, I said, I'm with BJ Armstrong, and BJ he's been good for me. We have a great relationship. But if I wasn't with BJ, I'd be with Rich Paul, who you ultimately ended up signing with, which leads me to what have you gotten from Clutch that has helped propel you in this league? Because I know there are a lot of agents in the business. I think there are other great agents in the business. I'm not saying it's not. But I know Clutch has given me something that I never got from someone else. What is it that they've given you that you don't think is normal or is common in our league?
You know, being a teenager, being a 20-year-old, being thrown into this lifestyle, it's tough. It's tough for everybody. And I feel like Rich does a great job of just making sure that you're on your P's and Q's 24/7, like with basketball, with girls, with partying, all that type of stuff. Like, he always try to give you some type of advice to make sure that you're doing the right things. And I feel like other agencies don't reach out to the guys like Rich or Brandon or Farrah or all those people who do. But Clutch does a great job of doing that. And it's like a brotherhood. And it kind of reminds me of Michigan State. Just like the events they be having, putting guys in group chats, making sure you're talking to the main guys. Like, as soon as I got in the Clutch, me and Brian, we're texting. He was giving me advice about anything. So nobody's off limits in Clutch. Like, it's no bigger. And they treat everybody the same. So I feel like that's what it is about Clutch for me. What about you?
I agree with all of those things. I think also one of the most beautiful things to me is how they teach you and try to prepare you for life. How Rich and Farrah and the entire team, how they're trying to give you things that most people don't give to young African-American men. You know, when I was looking to buy a house, Rich walked several homes with me. Like, I mean, at one house that I thought we were going to buy, I called Rich. Hazel and I had walked the house, and I called Rich, and I was so excited. And I'm like, man, I found the house. It's the one. And Rich walked in the house. And when he walked in, he's like, mm-mm. And he's just literally walking through the house pointing to stuff like, mm-mm, mm-mm, mm-mm. And then we walk all the way back through the house, and everything he pointed to and said, he told me why he was saying, like, look, this stone doesn't match. You go in the backyard, there's four different stones back here. It's just like they pieced this together. He's all like, right. He said they're going to get a sucker to buy this house, and I'm not going to let you be that sucker. You know, yeah. And it's things like that. It's him teaching young African-American men about the art business because you buy a $20,000 piece of art, and in 3 years, that piece of art can be worth $1 million. Like, it could be. So one of the things that I really appreciate about Clutch are those things and just helping guys adjust to life. You know, we get thrown into this fire, into this world that none of us has ever been privy to because we're all poor black kids from the inner city. Right. And you're just expected to figure it out. And most agents don't take the, like, most agents don't give a damn what house you buy. Like, most agents don't care whether you go buy a chain or you go buy art. Like, most agents won't do that. And so that's what I'm very appreciative of about Clutch and something that I think separates them from the bunch.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Sure.
But last question before we get out of here, man, a very simple one. I just want to hear how your children are doing. How old are they? Like, and secondly, how did becoming a father change you as a basketball player and as a young man?
I have two children, you know, Ace Miles Bridges, Ayla Marie Bridges. Ace is 3, and his birthday October 26th. Ayla, she's 2. She just turned 2. She's turned 2 February 23rd. And I feel like they changed my
Pisces
life.
Pisces gang of don't bang. You heard
it. He's definitely a Pisces. But yeah, I had my son a month before the season started, It was a month after the season started in October. And it just changed my life for the better. You know, before I came into the NBA, I really didn't have anything to play for, you know, except for my mom, but she was good. I got her a house and all that, but I really didn't have nothing to play for. And I feel like my kids were born, I had something to play for, and it's definitely a good responsibility. It gives me a good motivation to go out there and do what I do. And the best thing about my kids is I never changed to them. You know, I could have the worst game in the world, come back, I'm still dad, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the best feeling ever, man. Just coming back to my kids, being loved by them, and me giving them love. It's unconditional love, and you can't explain it really. So I'm happy to be a dad. I'm a dad first always.
Oh, absolutely, man. I think the one thing it gives you, it just puts everything into perspective. You know,
right.
Before kids, you have a bad game, you go home, you think about that game until you play another game.
Right.
You have kids, you go home, bad game. Daddy, what's up? What's going on? Like, it's like nothing ever happened. So I definitely understand it, man. I am extremely proud of the father that you have become, that you're growing into. And more importantly, I think we all can get better, that you'll continue to grow into. I think it's a beautiful thing, man. And I also, obviously, in having kids young, I also have an appreciation for them being able to see your career, you know, like,
right.
And yeah. You know, your kids are going to come into money they would have never understood how the money was made had you had kids older. And so I think it's incredible, man. As a big brother, I'm super proud of you. Keep going. I appreciate you coming on the show, my brother, and we'll link soon. And we definitely doing Spartan Grind Week again, but I actually have one more question before I let you go. I lied, and I'm sorry about that. But recently, Darius Baisley just came out and said he's the best rapper in the NBA. Now, I've never heard a DB song, so I can't say he's not. But I do know two rappers in the NBA that I absolutely respect, and that's Damian Lillard and you. And I where do you rate yourself? Y'all my top two. Maybe you know someone else who's better. I don't know. But where do you rate yourself or rank yourself as far as rappers in the NBA?
Of course I'm gonna rank myself number one. I don't want Dame to try to get no rap beef with me. But
Dame, he don't want the smoke, Dollar. He don't want that smoke, Dollar. He saw what you did to Shaq. He don't want the smoke.
Hey, but I definitely think I'm number one. You know, Dame got a great sound. He's very lyrical. I heard D-Bay's stuff. D-Bay's not messing with me or Dame. But, you know, and the crazy thing is, you heard my first ever rap song I ever made. When I was in Michigan, when I took my official Michigan State, I played it for you. I was like, hold on, start this over. I wasn't good at the time, so it's crazy. But yeah, I have to say myself, Dame, D-Bass, he all right. But Anthony Edwards, he's pretty good too.
And man rap?
Yeah, y'all got to get hip to him. He's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I'll tell you what, and I'll let you go. Since I feel like you've changed your whole rap style since I last heard that song, like it's I think your rap style now is more like the it's like the Detroit, like like there's a sound and everyone there's a sound to it, and I think if people hear it and they know that type of music, they'll understand it. But nonetheless, brother, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for coming on the Draymond Green Show, bro.
No, I appreciate you today for sure.
Get in them playoffs, man, because that's going to make that bag bigger. Believe that.
I got you. Appreciate you, bro. Love you. All love.
Yes, sir. Love you too, bro. Thank you. Man, that was incredible. Being able to share with you guys some of Miles' story and his journey and, you know, the growth that he's had to have over the course of his career. I was also excited to hear, like, no, I talk to MJ and, like, I can text him all the time. Like, that's a big deal. I don't care who you are or what you say. When you could just text Michael Jordan, that's not like some small thing. That's a very big deal. And just to know that Mike is that hands-on with the team and those guys, like, you know, we all have someone in basketball that we can turn to. When you can turn to Michael Jordan, like, that's incredible and intimidating, extremely intimidating. But, you know, I think it's amazing for them to be able to call on Mike. And I'm looking forward to continuing to see their team grow. Obviously very young. Miles is still very young. LaMelo is very young. And they're building around those guys. So it's beautiful to see. I hope you all got to know Miles a little bit better than you knew him before. Extremely hard worker, really puts the time in. And I think another thing that was important for me to hear is just about Miles as a father. I've seen it. And, you know, when you have children, it stimulates a different type of growth and also at a different speed. And so it's beautiful to see him taking on that responsibility and really raising his children the right way. I know for me, that is the most important thing in my life, is raising my children and doing that with love and compassion. And so a young guy like that, to have two kids still thriving in his career, thriving as a father, as a young African-American man from the inner city, you know, I cherish that and appreciate that way more than the high flying dunk and the Hornets crazy, absolutely insane announcer. I mean, he brings the most insane energy. I absolutely love it. But I take that way more to the heart as far as him as a father than the high flying dunks. That'll always mean more to me. So kudos to Miles. appreciate him coming on the show. I hope you all enjoy. Until next week, it's a wrap. Draymond Green Show. Peace.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.